It was a dark, rainy and starless night. Bonfire night, full of expectations, had been its usual disappointment. Wet piles of wood littered the land, topped by many sad and soggy ragdoll Guy Fawkes. However, the show must go on. Blackfriars Grange had never seen a party such as this. Blackfriars Grange had, in fact, never seen a party at all. Outside, one half of the substantial front garden had a giant gazebo erected so people could stand and watch the fireworks and bonfire in comfort. The house was lit up, and candles in jars shimmered all over the garden. A large pile of wood and branches were covered by plastic sheeting, and under a large tree sat a roly-poly Guy Fawkes, happily sheltering from the rain. The garden was still quite wild, even after work done by the local gardener, but after years with no one to tend it, and it also being November, it was the best it could look. Peter Woodall, affectionately called Woody, by everyone who knew him, was struggling down the dirt path to the Grange, with various parts of his drum kit strung about him. He was a large man, and the walk up the hill, from where Michael had parked the car, had made him red in the face and short of breath. They were descending now, on the track to the Grange. "At least I'm warm now. You want to get that heater fixed in your car, Mick?" "Michael hasn't got the money for that, Woody," Stephen said.
"Shut up, Stephen," Michael snapped.
"Well, I can't accuse you of spending it on fast cars."
"What about loose women?" Woody jokingly said.
"You'd have to pay them, wouldn't he, Woody?" Stephen said, and nudged Woody with his elbow.
"Less of it, Stephen, unless you want to walk home," Michael grunted.
"Hey, Mick, what's crawled up your arse?" Woody asked. "I'm not having my younger brother talk to me like that. He knows what he'll get."
"Bloody hell!" Woody exclaimed,
wanting to defuse the situation now. "He's 29 years old. So he should have learned by now then, shouldn't he?" He boomed. He said it way too loudly, and Woody thought he sounded like he knew he was wrong, but was trying to convince himself that he was right. Michael quickened his pace, and Stephen quickened his too, to keep up. There was no way that Woody could walk that fast, even downhill, so he decided to put his drum cases down for a second and catch his breath. After a minute, Woody heard voices. Recognising them as some of the band, he turned around to look up the hill. There were no street lights here at all, and it was drizzling again, so he put his hood up and waited. He knew the rest of the band would help him with his kit. The Thompsons had never offered to carry a thing. Soon he saw Liz, Diane, Vicky and Colin. They all picked up a case from Woody, apart from Vicky. There was a much better atmosphere and conversation straight away. Woody thought that this was partly because they had already had a few in the pub earlier. Diane especially was quite unsteady on her feet and had a big grin on her face with flushed cheeks.
"You got stuck with Thompson, didn't you, Woody?" Liz asked.
"Yeah, and lucky me. There was no heating in the car. We had to have all the windows open because of them steaming up, and I was in the back, getting the full force of it. Then to put a top hat on it, Thompson Sr. just had a go at Steve. It was really awkward."
"Well, you might get a lift back from Keith. I don't think he was bringing anyone," Liz said.
"Yeah, and he won't take anyone back either. Miserable bastard. I'm not asking him. A refusal often offends. Besides that, I never feel comfortable around him being a copper. I always think I'm going to admit to something I've never done." They all laughed. Michael and Stephen carried on in silence. They were soon at the Grange, and Michael thought, "I should be living somewhere like this."
"Can you smell that, Stephen?" he asked.
"What? Have you had egg?" Stephen quickly covered his face with his sleeve.
"No, stupid boy. There is a reek around here. But it's money, lovely money."
He walked confidently up the steps and rang the bell. A young woman answered the door. She was beautiful, in a sexual kind of way. She had long, shiny, chocolate-coloured hair, dark almond-shaped eyes, and full, cherry-red lips. She wore a simple red sweater, which clung to her figure, and a tight red skirt with black boots.
Michael thought he recognised her, but that she was slightly different from the person he thought she was. "Good evening, and welcome to Blackfriars Grange," she said in a light voice.
"Evening. We are from Friarmere Band. I'm your point of contact." He offered out a business card. Ernie didn't know about them. Michael had gone to a machine on a service station on the M62 motorway and had had them done. She took it in her hands and read it.
"Michael Thompson, band manager. Come in, Mr. Thompson." She opened the door further and they stepped in. She shut the heavy wooden door behind them.
"This is my brother Stephen. He plays the baritone."
"That's wonderful. If you would like to follow me." She turned on her heel and walked away from the door. She gestured to a dark green room and said, "You may go into there after you have played to join the party. You are playing in the blue room." She walked past the green room, past another door that was closed, and then opened the next door and gestured inside. This was a dark brown room, and along one wall was a long table laden with food. "These refreshments are just for the band and no one else. If you would like to change here, and when you have all arrived and are ready, I shall return and take you all to the blue room." The two men entered the room, and she shut the door behind them. Behind the door stood Keith, Darren, Morris, and Vincent, all with plates piled high with food from the large table and a glittering glass of red wine each.
"Oh, I thought I was the first," Michael said.
"You're always wrong, though, aren't you, Thompson?" Keith said.
"Yeah, and don't tell Ernie. We had a drink before we played. We will know it is you if we get in trouble," Darren added.
Michael ignored him and went to the table. It was beautifully set out with an expensive cloth. There were various kinds of hot pie, including cheese and onion, and chicken and beef, a steaming terrine of soup, jacket potatoes, pickled red cabbage, treacle toffee, and black peas. Plus, an enormous chocolate fudge cake with a jug of cream. On a separate table at the end were about 20 bottles of wine and crystal glasses, all red, and what seemed like a ridiculous amount of crisps in a china serving bowl.
"Now, you can put a couple of bottles of that wine in your baritone case and carry the instrument home," he whispered to Stephen.
"I would rather take the crisps, actually. You know I like crisps. Anyway, what if I get caught?" Stephen asked.
"Don't get caught," he replied.
"Hey, Stephen, that bird was a bit of all right, wasn't she?" Morris said with a cheeky wink.
Stephen nodded, finishing his mouthful of crisps before laughing.
"Yeah, Maurice, I would," and winked back.
"I'm getting myself sorted out before you, Stephen," Michael said crossly. "She looks like a woman that would appreciate an experienced man like myself."
All the men laughed, and just then the girl in question entered the room. They all looked embarrassed, making it was clear that they had been talking about her. The other band members followed her in, and she quietly left the room. The group of men erupted with laughter.
"Let me guess. One of you thinks you might end up with her," Liz said.
"Michael thinks he's in with a chance," Morris said in between gasps of uncontrollable guffaws.
The new group looked at each other and joined in the laughter.
"Cat in hell's chance," griped Keith.
"She looks like she actually has taste."
Michael sat at the other end of the room. He drank his wine and ate his pie and thought how wrong they were and how he would show them. After about 15 minutes, which was time for everyone to have at least one glass of wine and a plate of food, the woman returned and asked them if they were almost ready, as most of the guests had arrived. They followed her to a large room on the other side of the house, which did indeed have blue walls. They all walked in with their instruments and started to take a seat. Michael was the last to enter, and the lady put her hand on his shoulder and said, "Mr. Morgan is very eager to meet you, Mr. Thompson. Could you come with me?"
"Oh, yes, yes. Lead the way, miss," he said, hoping that she would give him her name.
"Kate," she said, "just Kate."
"Beautiful," he replied.
They walked back the way they had just come, and Kate went to the door, which was between the green and brown rooms. She opened the door and gestured inside. The interior was quite dark, and through the door he could only see the edge of a desk. "After you," Kate said. Michael walked into the room, and Kate pulled the door shut quietly behind him. He also heard a quick, metallic noise, which he thought was the door being locked from the outside with a key. This room seemed to be an office of sorts, but not the kind he had ever been in. This was a luxury office. Expensive solid wood furniture with leather upholstery and the deep burgundy colour, and it was lit just by the light of a green banker's lamp on the desk. As his eyes adjusted to the half-light, he saw that a middle-aged man was smiling at him from the other side. "Welcome, Mr. Thompson. We meet again." "Pleased to meet you, Mr. Morgan," Michael said. He offered out another business card and Norman took it. "I am sorry, Mr. Morgan. I don't remember meeting you. You have me at a disadvantage." "Ah, yes. But of course you won't remember. Never mind," Norman replied, still smiling. "Please have more wine." He said this as he was already pouring a glass for Michael. "I do insist that you enjoy my hospitality." "Thank you very much," Michael replied, as he took the glass and greedily took a big slurp of the wine. "I hope you are happy with the band's performance tonight. We should go into the other room, really. You want to enjoy what you have paid for, don't you?" "The music is for my guests tonight. I will enjoy the band wholeheartedly at a later date." "Is that what you want to see me about? Another booking?" Michael asked excitedly. "No, I wanted to meet you. I want to make myself at home here. I would like to find out about you and what makes people tick around here, so to speak." "I'm your man, then," Michael said quickly, and took another drink of his wine. "I thought you might be. I sensed it," Norman said.
As he did, he moved his finger slowly round and round in a circle on the desk, and Michael watched. "The people here seem to be very old-fashioned, and I like that. They seem to be very interested in each other and in marrying each other, and then having children who then grow up and settle in this oasis amongst the wilderness. I wonder about them and their habits, and how to integrate quickly and efficiently. I need people who will help me do that, and I had my eyes peeled for such men and ladies. I would like them to be of a certain type. Ambitious, insightful, articulate. Pillars of the community. But I also know when there is an extra special quality in a man. Maybe raw, unused talents that I once possessed myself many years ago. And I think you are that man. I know you are him. I tell you what I think, Mr. Thompson." Norman moved forward quickly, from sitting behind the lamp to being fully illuminated. The banker's lamp made shadows on his face. His eyes looked black and hollow. Inside, his mouth was endlessly deep and dark red. "I think you are a man who should have power and wealth and respect. A man who would like those things and more, for people to look at you and envy you, and maybe just a little fear you, yes, fear you, Michael, for them to look and say, I wish I was him. I had his life, and I had everything he had, and his woman, maybe someone like the lovely Kate, or even Kate herself."
He trailed off, and then looked at Michael full on in the eyes and stared at him. "Am I right in what I sense?" Norman asked. Michael swallowed hard, his throat rasped dry with no words in it. "Yes," he said quietly, and took another drink. "And that is where we come to the meat of it, so to speak." The vampire rose out of his seat and walked around the desk. He walked to a cabinet at the end and took out a bottle of wine in an ornate bottle and two glasses. He returned to the desk and sat back down, slowly opening the wine, which had a jewelled stopper in the neck and not a cork. He poured a full glass and a half glass of wine. He placed the full glass before Michael. "My very best wine for our toast. We must seal the deal." Michael immediately took the glass and drank half its contents. "What if I told you I could give you all that? That your life could change from this moment because of me? What if I said you could have Kate tonight? Any way you liked, I can make that happen for you." He considered the man across the table. "What if that could be all yours now? What would you say?" What do I have to do? Thompson asked hungrily. It seemed the second drink of wine had made him find his voice. A lot of self-development, a few chores. Everything must have its price. I think, though, that you might think the price is not too bad. In time, you will grow to love it, I can assure you. And I think that many should also go through this self-development too. Growing and changing can be painful, but no pain, no gain, as they say. He filled Michael's glass again. Michael took it and drank it all the way down. I want it. Tell me what to do. You're already on the way, Michael. I will call Kate. She will entertain you, and then after, enjoy my party. I will be in contact about the price. Michael noticed that Norman hadn't touched his wine. He began to feel nauseous and dizzy, probably from drinking a lot of wine really quickly. He sat in the chair and must have lost consciousness for a moment, because all of a sudden, Kate was standing next to him and putting her hand in his. Would you like to come upstairs with me, Michael? Do you want me? She whispered as she bent to his ear. He could smell her cherry lipstick and another smell, earthy, like soil. Yes, he said slowly. But it seemed to him that he could hear his own voice from afar. The vampire stood and laughed and nodded towards him. Good man, good, Norman said, a very joyful expression on his face. He could hear his blood rushing in his ears, and it sounded like the sea. He felt himself get up, go out the room, and walk up the stairs. It felt like the time. He had had his wisdom tooth taken out, and his cousin came to get him. He remembered going to the car, but just floating and going through the motions, not because he wanted to or realised what he should do, but just because his sister told him what to do. He found himself in a bedroom and thought, I feel quite cold, actually. Kate told him to sit on the bed, and he did. Sitting down on a chair nearby, Kate took off her boots, skirt, and sweater. Underneath, she was smooth and white and naked. She was stunning, and he had never had a woman like her in his life. She slowly walked over to him, but in his state of mind, he felt like she glided, and he reached out and took her hand and kissed her soft, cold skin. She started to undress him. Downstairs, the band carried on. After they had played, their host walked in and stood in front of the band, clapping his hands quietly. Thank you, Friar Mayor Band. That was wonderful. Let me introduce myself. My name is Norman Morgan, and I am the owner of Blackfriars Grange. I have thoroughly enjoyed renovating this house, and have received a warm welcome from many of the local people here. Some of you I have already met, and some of you I hope to be able to call you my friends after tonight. Please enjoy my hospitalities. We are going to light the bonfire soon and set off the fireworks. I believe tonight we have the largest Catherine wheel in the north. There will be a disco later, and do not be afraid to stop until dawn, if you so please. My home is yours tonight. There was a short round of applause, and Norman walked out. Some people went into the green room, while others started to put on their coats and hats to watch the bonfire and fireworks. The band went back into the brown room and put their instruments into their cases. Some of them started to eat more of the pie and peas that were there, which had been kept hot on warmers. Diane went straight for the wine. After a short while, they collectively decided they would go and mingle, apart from Keith, who said he would rather stay in the room on his own with the food. He was determined to try one of each pie and decide which was most delicious. When Diane and Liz and Vicky went into the green room, Diane noticed that Christine, who lived up the lane, was talking to Norman. She was fluttering her false eyelashes at him, and had a very ill-advised amount of fake tan on. She drank a glass of wine with one hand, and with her other hand, she twirled her peroxide blonde hair with her fingers while gazing at Norman.
Look at that, Liz. That fat Christine is talking to him, Diane said under her breath.
So what? Replied Liz. Well, I wouldn't have minded to go on that. She nodded her head once in Norman's direction. And she's got in first? I think you ought to have a go on the black coffee and slow down a bit, said Liz. Knickers, Diane stated, rather loudly, and walked over to the wine table. Liz sighed.
I wouldn't mind, Vicky, but it's everywhere we go. She has to get drunk.
I know what she means, though, Vicky said, looking at Norman with a smirk on her face. I wouldn't mind a go on that, either. He's very fit for an older bloke. He looks like he would be right filthy between the sheets, she chuckled. Vicky, he is twice your age, old enough to be your father. At least he and Diana are about the same age. You're sex mad. Many a good tune played on an old fiddle, Vicky said, and took another sip of her wine while looking at Norman over the top of her glass. Just then, they noticed Stephen was right behind them, listening to their conversation. What's that, Vicky? Are you changing instruments? Going on a fiddle? They don't have them in brass bands. You would have to leave. The two women looked at each other, but didn't answer. Anyway, have you seen my brother? He's probably outside on the bonfire, Vicky said with a smirk. I'll go outside and look then, he said. Liz sighed, then said, We'll come with you, Steve. She looked around the crowd. It's a bit dead in here. They didn't find Michael for the next hour. One by one, the band left. Stephen was getting a bit worried when he went back into the changing room and found Maurice just getting all his stuff together. He was struggling as he was trying to carry his coat, his instrument, some music, and two paper serviettes tied together full of food. Maurice planned to have this for his lunch the next day. It didn't make it any easier that he was in his late 60s and had a significant limp from an injury in a motorbike crash 15 years ago. Have you seen my Michael, Maurice? Stephen asked. I haven't, lad. Not since before the concert. Have you checked outside? Yes, no sign. Oh, I don't know then. Maurice started to walk to the door. He seemed to stop and have a second thought. I bet I know where he is. I bet he's with that lass we saw earlier. He laughed. I haven't seen her since then either. He carried on laughing and shaking his head as he walked out the door. Stephen decided to have more pie and quietly sat down to eat it in one of the seats. He looked at the objects left and realised there was only his brothers and his things here. Then he had a second thought, got up and picked up the bowl of crisps, set it on the seat next to him and began to munch away quite contentedly. Norman stood in a dark upper floor room overlooking the front entrance. He watched the last few guests walking up the track, happily unaware of what was beginning in their village. Kate joined him, and they both stood together for a moment before she spoke. You have offered the man, Michael, all his wishes and eternal life. I do not wish to question you, Master, but I have seen many men here tonight who are more worthy than him. Yes, more worthy, but not as pliable, he replied. They will all get their chance for transformation one way or another. But Michael is just a pawn in my game. He will never become as great as you or me. Once he has served his uses, and there will be many, I will discard him. You see, Kate, most worthy subjects, require the full act of turning to do my bidding, as you did. And that sometimes puts them in a less than useful position. But you see, Michael, he craves respect and power so much, just my blood being inside him, and a bit of gentle persuasion will control him. Thus, making him a useful pawn by day or by night. Did you not enjoy making his dreams come true? Out of all the things I have done, in my life before death and my ascendance since death, of all the things I have done, in disgrace and shame, that is the worst, she said quietly with a hint of anger. Norman laughed loudly. My dear Kate, it was a great thing you did for me, and the cause tonight. Believe me, if he was so inclined, I would have done that job, not you. But he considers himself a virile, red-blooded male, so it is a lady he would like. I wish I had better news and could say I won't ask you to do it again, but I must keep him sweet, and you must play your part in that. I will say to you, though, as recompense, I will give you a plump child to drink for every time you must humiliate yourself with him. How is that for a deal? Would you like that, Kate? Yes, please, she smiled, and he noticed her teeth and mouth were already tasting the child. She was easily controlled too,